going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Quarterback competition sure to be interesting, if nothing else. And Scott Petrak on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You are 100% correct about that.
Thank you. What's going on, guys?
I was struck with this as the picks were rolling. I thought they're trying to recreate the 2023 Cleveland Browns, the Kevin Stefanski team, the Jim Schwartz defense. You add two defensive players to a team that is so screaming for offensive help early on that I thought, man, you want to beef up that defense again. And then you add Stefanski type of offensive players, running backs, tight ends, and a couple of quarterbacks that Kevin might be able to win with. It looks to me like they're just trying to roll the clock back and forget last year with Ken Dorsey as offensive coordinator. What do you think?
Yeah, I heard you guys talk about that earlier. I don't know if I agree with that wholeheartedly, Jeff. I mean, I know where you're going with it. I think that's the formula. I think it's more about the formula, not necessarily 2023. And if you're not going to have a blue chip franchise quarterback, which it appears like they don't have, we'll see if somebody emerges, then then you have to do it with defense and a running game. And yeah, we've seen Stefanski do that before, whether it was, you know, 2023 is probably the best example. It's the most recent one. They went to the playoffs. And I do think we're going to see a return to that style of offense as well with the two tight ends and more running backs or more running the ball and try to get back to a premier running attack, which they had, you know, for multiple years early in Kevin Stefanski's tenure. So I think it was based on, okay, we don't have the quarterback. Let's figure out another way to win and compete. And also, without forcing things in 2025, I think there was an eye toward the future. You know, that started with the first trade, where the key reason they did it was to be able to get that 2026 first-round draft.
Do you think when training camp rolls around, they're going to sell more snow cones, cotton candy, or elephant ears? What will be the big hit at training camp?
Well, if I'm the one making the decision, it'll be elephant ears.
Yeah, I'm going to go with
it. Not such a big fan of the other two.
No, snow cone sometimes can be a good relief on a 90-degree day. I'll give you that, but there's never enough flavor in there. There's a part of me that just doesn't. Okay, you want competition, that's great. The other part of it is, why didn't they just take Shedeur Sanders earlier in the draft? Like, I'm still trying to figure out exactly how this went down and if they changed anything on the fly, especially after Jalen Milroe was picked.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if Milroe was their guy. I feel like if he was, then they just should have moved up 5 picks and gotten him instead of letting the Seahawks take him 2 picks before them. I know they liked Dillon Gabriel for a long time. From the Senior Bowl, they had good interactions. You know, they had him in for a visit. They went out to Eugene to work him out. I think he was the guy on the radar for a quarterback pick in that area of the draft, right? And they wound up taking him to the bottom of the third round. I think that was their plan the entire time. Now, we can argue about that plan because I don't like that pick. And, you know, obviously you give the guy a chance and maybe he surprises me, and I get it. He threw for 18,000 yards and 155 touchdowns. Was phenomenal. Oregon was really good, won a ton of games. I don't like short quarterbacks. And
I agree.
He's a short quarterback, and he's not. He doesn't have a big frame. He's kind of narrow. Doesn't throw it unbelievable. He throws it fine, and you know you see some Scottsdale. He spins it really well. He doesn't have the athleticism that a Kyler Murray does. You know, I mean, Kyler Murray and Bryce Young were both number one picks, and I had somebody tell me, oh, they're both smaller than Gabriel. That's fine. I didn't like either of those picks either, and I think the jury's still out on both guys, but I'll tell you what, Kyler Murray throws it great, and he's an incredible athlete that can create plays when they break down and get space and get out in the open to find lanes, and I don't think Dylan Gabriel's the same kind of athlete. So, you know, he feels like a backup quarterback to me, and maybe that's fine in the third round, but then Shedeur Sanders, on top of that, and I have no problem with the trade of moving up to get Shedeur Sanders. I think that's great value. We've talked about it a million times. I like Sanders. Like, I wouldn't have hated if they took him at two. Like, throughout the draft process, I like this kid. So I think he's a great value in the fifth round. I think he has a better chance to be a starter in this league than Gabriel does. And maybe I'll be proved wrong. And obviously the Browns didn't feel that way because they took Gabriel ahead of him. But that's, you know, there's two picks in this in the Browns draft that had me scratching my head. And Gabriel was one of them, especially that high. I think you could have waited and taken him in the fourth or fifth round.
Yeah, that's the one thing I thought about it too, Scott. I didn't think anybody was clamoring to draft Dylan. And at that point, you know, the one quarterback that everybody liked in this draft was already off the board.
Yep.
You know, and then Jackson Dart, the Giants trade up for him. That's interesting. I don't mind the idea, and going back to the piece you wrote, fine, bring in four guys and let them compete for the job. And, you know, maybe Pickett improves, you know, and maybe the chip on his shoulder is huge. Sanders gets a chance to come in and silence everybody. Dylan Gabriel gets a chance to say, hey, I did it in college. I can do the same thing in the pros. I've had people tell me they absolutely love the guy. I'm with you. I'm not crazy about a 5'11 quarterback. Yeah. Russell Wilson did just fine at 5'11, you know, playing in Seattle. Yeah. Who knows? Let's see what happens. Let's see them compete. If you're putting money on it now, who's the starter?
I'd go with Kenny Pickett because I think that's who they want to start, because they feel like he has a chance to turn into something that he hasn't been to this point, right? They think there's an upside with Kenny Pickett. I'm not going to go as far as what Sam Darnold did in Minnesota, but that's, you know, that's the blueprint. That's what they're trying to recreate, is get a former first-round pick. And I know Darnold was the third pick in a quarterback-heavy draft, and Pickett was a 20th pick in a terrible quarterback draft, so there's a huge difference there. But the hope is that they can unlock something with Kenny Pickett, and he turns out to be the long-term starter. Like, that's, you know, the best-case scenario for this organization. So I think they will give him that chance. They know Joe Flacco is a short-term answer at best. You know, he could play, start for a year or two. I mean, he's 40 years old. Now, that doesn't mean Joe can't win the job and be the starter week one. I think they know what they have in Joe. So I think Kenny Pickett gets a chance to win that job. If he fails, then it's Joe Flacco or one of these rookies. And you know, if I were going to handicap it like a horse race, I'd go Pickett, Sanders, Flacco. And that's because I like Shedeur Sanders. I do think he'll be motivated by this. I'm sure the Browns are hoping he will be humbled by sliding to the fifth round. You know, you hear all the stories. Obviously, everybody knows the stories. That's why he slid as far as he did. Maybe that humbles him. Maybe he comes in and says, hey, you know, I got to work for everything. And he plays great because I think he's more talented than Dylan Gabriel. And maybe I'm wrong. I think they have a lot of similar skills or traits. They're both accurate. They're both good decision makers, which obviously is what the Browns are looking for. He's bigger than Gabriel. I think his arm's big enough. I went back and saw him make plenty of throws. I said, okay, this kid's got enough. So I would go Pickett, the favorite, Sanders, and then Flacco. And maybe I'm not giving Dylan Gabriel his just due, but I'm having a hard time getting over the size.
But you don't think that the Browns agree with you on that, right? Based on the draft pick?
No. Okay. No, I don't. I think I think Gabriel's higher on their board, but things change when guys get here, and they're going to be right next to each other, right? Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders are going to be next to each other every step of the way. And you go, man, that kid's bigger. And, you know, I need to see these guys throw in person because I think that's hugely valuable. Maybe the ball comes out of Gabriel's hands better. But, you know, can he see? How does he find those lanes? And that's, you know, that's not that easy to evaluate in OTAs and you know, mini or training camp because there's not necessarily a full pass rush and those kinds of things. But I think my guess is I think Sanders is a better quarterback. That's how I felt coming out. So it hasn't changed just because Gabriel got picked two rounds ahead.
So who gets the reps in practice? Because that's going to be huge. Right. It's going to be huge.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. You know, I think, and the problem is, you know, Kenny Pickett hasn't been here. He hasn't been in Tommy Reese and Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Reese's offense. So he needs the reps. It's not you could just say, hey, he knows what he's doing. I think you can with Flacco. So I don't think Flacco's going to get a ton of reps. And I think it's going to be the other three guys getting a bunch of them. And I would expect Pickett to get most of them and then split the rookies who get an even split. So, you know, I don't know. Is it 40 for Pickett? I don't know. I'm trying to do some quick math in my head. 25, 25, and 10, you know, and Flacco kind of gets the scraps. And then if it looks like he's going to be the guy, then you really ramp him up. Like, I could see that being the case early in the offseason program.
Scott Petrak joining us, Chronicle Telegram, brownzone.com. Scott has a great analysis on the quarterbacks. Running back is interesting to me. You drafted two who were really highly thought of, really productive in college, and I can't think anything other than it's Judkins, it's Sampson, and I don't know if Jerome Ford is on this team. Is he somebody you trade to try and find a wide receiver? Pierre Strong, I can't imagine he's on this team because that's Sampson. And if anything, it screams to me, okay, you've got two new guys, rookies, they're going to play, and maybe you could bring in Nick Chubb. Maybe. How does it play out, you think?
Yeah, that's interesting, Jeff, because my initial thought, and you know, Andrew Berry got asked about this on Saturday, was you draft two running backs, that's the end of Nick Chubb. And Andrew Berry didn't shoot that down. He said, never say never, I'm paraphrasing, never say never, but the landscape of this room changed this weekend. So I don't think their plan is to bring back Nick Chubb. But if they were to get an offer for Jerome Ford that they thought was worthwhile, could I see Chubb coming back as a third back mentor? Maybe. But he's going to know he's not going to get a bunch of carries. I mean, that's the problem. His role would be so diminished that I think a more likely scenario is what played out with Kareem Hunt in 2023. And that Nick Chubb remains unsigned. I'm not saying he will, but let's say he remains unsigned. Somebody gets hurt, and then you go call Nick Chubb in week two and say, hey, let's see what he's got left. That feels more likely to me because, hey, they're so invested in these two rookies, and you know I would expect them to play 95% of the time at running back, assuming they're healthy. Now, you know, I like both guys. I really do, and I like Junkins a lot. I don't know if I would take him running back that high. I think you could have waited until the third round and taken somebody. You could have waited until the fourth round and taken Sampson, and I think Sampson could be a starter in this. So they got two starters. You know, we can talk about value all you want, but I like these two picks. You know, we can quibble about where they were taken. And then the other question is, you talked about the needs. They have a need at safety. They have a need at wide receiver. They have a need at left tackle, I think. So did it make sense to take a second running back when you have those other needs? You know, obviously he was the highest guy on the board, and we talked about their commitment to the run. They're going to recommit to the run. So I understand it. Those are kind of the small things you look at and go, okay, did they really need two running backs when you might have been able to address a different position?
They draft Carson Schwestinger. What does that mean for JOK, and where do you think we are with that? Like, I was excited to hear that he had walked into the building the other day, but,
yeah.
I mean, when they drafted him, it made a lot of people go, uh-oh, maybe this isn't good. Worse.
But yeah, I mean, it looks like a JOK replacement. There's no doubt. Now, I asked Andrew Berry about that, and he said he understood it, but they don't have any kind of word that JOK is not going to play in 2025. It's still, you know, nebulous is the word he's been using. He said they would have taken Schwestinger regardless. You know, I take that with a grain of salt. I'm not sure I believe that. When I said there were two picks I didn't like, that's the other one I don't like. And it's nothing against Schwestinger as a player. You know, really productive at UCLA for one season only, which I have questions about that. But I get it. They think he's on the rise. I just would not take a linebacker that high. I just don't think there's enough value there. And either the Browns. And so I guess my point is the Browns have always talked about the linebacker is the least important part on, you know, piece on defense. They made an exception to trade up and take JOK. And that was in the 50s, 2001, right? 4 years ago. So you're telling me that Schwestinger is the same exception as JOK was 4 years later? Like you found two of these great exceptions that you have to take these linebackers in second round. I don't understand that. I don't necessarily agree with that. I get it. JOK doesn't play. You need a replacement, so I see why they did it. But I think you could have gotten way more value at 33 and then taken a linebacker somewhere later in the draft.
Scott Petrak joining us. Wide receiver was ignored in the draft. There are some names out there, and I'm going to have a list of guys that are going to make Andy puke coming up a little later on in the show. Do they have to add somebody here? You have Jerry Jeudy. You have Cedric Tillman. I don't think you have anybody after that. And Cedric Tillman didn't come back after a concussion. Is he good to go? I mean, that position group is really weak.
Well, I agree. I don't have any doubt you have to add somebody. And, I'm sure they'll bring undrafted guys in when they have rookie mania camp in a couple weeks. I think they need to go sign a veteran. They value their receivers more than people outside the building. Yeah, I'm sure they think that maybe Michael Woods has a shot. Jamari Thrash is going to be a second-year guy. Didn't show anything as a rookie. David Bell, they were always hiring David Bell. He doesn't separate very well. He's got good hands. He's coming off an injury. So, I think they're hoping one of those guys or two of those guys emerges. But I think there's a big hole there after Jerry Jeudy. I think they definitely need to bring in at least one guy, maybe two guys. And, I'm sure they're going to focus on tight ends and play a bunch of two tight ends. But, eventually you got to spread it out and go three wides. And, if you're third and 12, you can't just run it up the middle. So you got to add some receivers.
So, Scott, when I saw the reaction video right away to the Sanders pick, I thought what everybody else did. And then it hit me. I was like, wait a minute. How should you react to a fifth-round pick? If you say, okay, it's fifth-round pick, anybody, wide receiver from State U, that's probably the reaction you're going to see. And everyone's kind of making a big deal about the reaction there. He's a fifth-round pick at the end of the day. I think people are going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, I Kevin Stefanski said sometimes the timing is off on those videos.
Sure.
And I think he's right on this one because there's nobody on the phone. Right? Usually when you have those reactions, it's the guy on the phone telling him he got picked and everybody erupts. Nobody's on a phone. This felt to me like it was almost the camera light came on and like, oh man, they're showing us. Let's try to clap. I'm not reading too much into that. I'm sure they were excited. Now, it's the end of a long week. It's a difficult trade. Right, not a difficult trade, but there's a lot goes into that trade. So, was there some emotion that they're like, "Oh my gosh, it got complete and we're done with the draft and we got this guy and maybe stuff comes with this, maybe." But I would not read too much into it, and I do think the timing had plenty to do with it. The timing of the video.
Scott Petrak joining us. Let's go to the first pick. You trade out. You don't get the wide receiver who everybody thought was the best wide receiver in the draft. You do get a great return on it. I can't argue with the return that they received. You're going to put Mason Graham in the middle of that defensive line. That does what for the defense? It does what for Myles Garrett? It does what for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think it improves their pass rush. I heard that Brian Horlip. If fans don't notice Mason Graham this year, then it's a terrible draft pick. He should show up. He should have, five or six sacks. He should create opportunities for Myles Garrett. He should be good in the run game with tackles for loss. That's what you need out of your fifth pick, the fifth overall pick. I think he was a top five player in this draft. Now, it's not like I'm some defensive tackle expert, but that's how the experts felt. I liked what I watched of him on film. I like addressing the interior. I think that helps Myles Garrett. You pair him with Mike Hall. I hope Mike Hall is the player you thought and stays healthy and stays on the field and not suspended. So I think he has a chance of a big impact on this draft.
I agree with you. Scott, thank you, buddy. Great work over the weekend.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Hulse.
Thanks,
Scott Petrak, brownzone.com. You can go back and read all of Scott's work. And his analysis on the quarterback competition that's on the way is really top-notch good stuff.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Quarterback is obviously a dominant subject here out of the Browns draft with them taking two quarterbacks. But remember, they took the two quarterbacks in the third and the fifth round. They took the running backs in the second and the fourth. I think that's a very telling thing. We're going to dig into that next.
You know, the storylines continue to add up for the Browns coming out of the draft. Obviously, we've been talking about that all morning. The Cavs are one step closer to their goal at a finals run. And don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app.
Click, click, click.
They took Quinshon Judkins from Ohio State with the second round pick. And Andy, your reaction was what?
Awesome. Like I said, it was a coin flip the whole time between Junkins and Henderson. So I was good with both. And by the way, both of those guys made each other better NFL running backs because they were able to split time last year. Whereas, and by the way, I give Henderson a lot of credit because Henderson probably could have bolted and said, well, I'm out of here when they decided to do it. But he embraced the fact that Judkins was at Ohio State last year, which I always gave him a ton of credit for throughout the season. I still give him credit today for that, and Judkins just has that incredible burst of speed that should be, you know, an asset in the AFC North. So I'm looking forward to Judkins. And again, it was a toss up between either one of the Ohio State running backs, and I'm glad they got one at least.
I don't care where they went to college. I like him because he's pretty good. And the minute they drafted him, I thought, okay, well, there's your running back one. It's not Jerome Ford. And then I looked at Dylan Sampson a little bit and heard good things, saw good things, and I thought, I wouldn't be shocked if they go get another running back, and I hope it's Dylan Sampson. And he's young, Andy. He doesn't turn 21 until September. So he's a young guy. He's not the biggest guy, but he's got some real burst. And if you watch him on tape, He's really interesting. He's not the biggest guy. Now he's listed at 5'11", about 201. He ran between the tackles at Tennessee. Now he wasn't the scat back, get outside and try and cut it up the field type of guy. I mean, his highlights just show him running between the tackles, finding some space, and then bursting through it. And I like the combination. I don't mind that they drafted two running backs. In fact, I like it. Because I think you'll have two offensive weapons who are under team-friendly deals, Andy, for 4 years, good period of time, and then you see what happens. What I do think is that it could lead to Jerome Ford finding another team. I wonder if that's the case. I wonder if a team that thinks they need a running back and maybe has an extra wide receiver, if you could do a wide receiver running back swap here. I don't think you draft Judkins and not make him the number one guy or one of the number one guys. And I don't think you draft Sampson and take carries away from him to give more to Jerome Ford. And nothing against Jerome. Jerome did solid work here. But I think it was unspectacular work. And I think if you have these two running backs, young guys, fresh wheels in what we know is going to be a running back based scheme, I think they get the carries. And I think that might mean a different opportunity ahead for Jerome Ford.
I wonder what they're going to do with Ford. I don't think Chubb's off the table either. I know we both talked about that a little bit. And I'm not going
to agree.
Anyone that says he's completely off the table, I'm not buying any part of that.
You could actually play three running backs. Other teams do.
I don't think that's a problem at all.
And so I if it's not Nick, it could be Jerome Ford. Maybe Jerome Ford sticks. No, maybe Pierre Strong sticks. I think it's more likely that Jerome sticks than Pierre. But teams carry four running backs.
Yeah, and Sampson, I was looking forward to watching him play against Ohio State, but remember he got that hamstring injury in the playoff game against Ohio State. And you go back and look at his games.
Good,
he is going to give you, well, I don't know. In college, he was able to, lock you in for at least a 100-yard game every game. And he had some big, the Kentucky game, he had 142. He had, a stretch there where in a 7-day period, he had, 290-some yards against Kentucky and Mississippi State. So, and by the way, they ran him, 25 to 30 times a game. So
and they ran it between the tackles.
Yeah, and so I think that's what's important about Sampson. So, they got two really, really, really good running backs in this thing, and I just think with Nick Chubb, that'd be a great trio. I'd like to see them bring Chubb back. only because I thought he was getting healthier as he was playing before he got hurt. And then to see the video a couple weeks ago of him still working out, I also think that, you know, sometimes the fan, you need to throw the fans an attaboy, and that attaboy would be bringing Chubb back. I know it doesn't really matter, but you want no drama, then bring him in. And by the way, I never want to keep a guy because they say, oh, well, he'll be a, you know, he could be a coach in the running back. No, he's not a coach. He's
no,
a guy that runs.
He's a player.
We have enough coaches. We always have enough coaches.
Here's the other thing. Do the Browns know if Nick still has it?
You know, well, they would know, right?
You would think they would. You know, coming back from the major knee injury again and then getting hurt again, you know, not with the knee, but you know, does he still have it? And I honestly think that's a legit question. Todd's in Ward 1. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Jeff, Andy, it sure is a legit question, and you, Andy, respond to it right. They know, so let them say. I have a question. I haven't seen enough video of the kid from Tennessee or the running back from Ohio State to know whether they catch the ball well.
Judkins can, for sure. And so,
Samson did as well.
Yeah, and Samson, even before he got hurt, had a catch against Ohio State in that game. So I can kind of look back here for a second on his big numbers. They can.
He had one big year at Tennessee, and the first two he kind of came along. You know, just a young guy breaking in, but yards per carry, he was very good. And what I really liked about him, Todd, you know, he's a little undersized maybe. He's 5'8", and, you know, almost
205.
Maybe not even 205. But he ran between the tackles. He's not that little scat back who's cutting outside all
and
the time.
They really didn't use him as a receiver at all. I mean, he had 140 last year. He had 143 receiving yards, and I'm just looking. I mean, his best game. He had a couple 3-catch games. So, for whatever that's worth.
I know the dude from Ohio State will knock somebody on their butt because I've seen that. I saw him play enough this year to see that he's a good blocker. And, of course, he's an exceptional running back. That's why he was drafted as a running back. But that's important.
And Todd, one thing about him to remember, when he was at Mississippi, he was the lead back and had big volume carries, over 270 each year. So when he came to Ohio State, you know, he split the carries with Henderson. But in the past, he has been a big-time, give-me-the-ball-25-times-a-game guy.
And if you look at both those guys, I wouldn't expect them to be catching a lot of passes. I mean, Jamal White, neither one of these guys are. I can tell you that. Well, as far as catching passes.
You just want to know that they can do it.
Well, numbers wise.
Yeah.
You just want to know that they can do it. We got receivers and tight ends for that.
Yep.
Yeah,
you got receivers and tight ends for that,
but you want to know that they can do it. I believe that the Browns got the pick right where it was supposed to be with Sanders. I did not see anything. I know a few scouts for the Bears and the Rams and the Chargers.
Oh, dang.
I know some dudes.
Ding.
But I don't know anybody that was high on Sanders at all. Everybody that I know that does these types of things for a living, not myself included, said that when the pocket's clean, he's exceptional, but he doesn't move that well. And the Gabriel kid, I watched that first Ohio State game. I think he got something for you.
Yeah, Todd.
I mean, he's better competition,
yep.
Better performance.
And he moves pretty well, Todd. He moves pretty well. 216-474-0092, number to join us. You want to talk Browns, we'll talk Browns. Cavs have a chance to wrap it up tonight. Little Cavs talk coming up. Matt Stevens, UCLA color commentator. We'll talk UCLA linebacker coming to the Browns in round two with us at noon. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy over there is Andy Baskin.
It's not Oregon, though, is it? Does that drive you? It's one of those words that drives me nuts because there's Oregon, Ohio. And that there are people who are like, oh, where'd you go, Oregon? And you're like, what? No, Oregon. Gun.
Oregon.
Gun.
Yeah. That's it. We're going to talk a little Cavs coming up here in a second, but Demos has been hanging on. Demos. Welcome.
Hello. So, when you guys were just talking about the running back situation, it's just like earlier with the quarterback. Like, why not take two? They're positions that you need, the young talent. It works out, you know, financially when you sign them and stuff like that. And really, at this point, it's just going to see how it plays out. And I honestly believe that Flacco or Kenny Pickett, if things go well with the two younger guys, they're going to be made expendable. And another thing that I saw over the weekend, speaking of expendable, they showed some film of Judkins crushing it, lifting weights. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, he's not, it used to be Nick Chubb crushing it, lifting weights, and he did a couple weeks ago, but now it's like they're kind of preparing us for this next, young stud coming along here who's just going to, like, you know, kill it in the weight room and kill it on the field. And so, look, life goes on. It's a professional game. These guys are like gladiators. You know, some make it to ultimate glory. Other guys get chewed up by the machine. That's pro football, and go Browns.
Demos, thank you very much. I agree with that. I have no qualms at all about the two running backs. Dylan Sampson, Andy, was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
SEC plays some pretty serious football, do they not?
Last time I checked, yes, that is correct.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cavaliers have a chance to, and we're going to get back into the draft coming up here at noon when we talk to Matt Stevens from UCLA. Cavaliers have a chance to put away the Miami Heat tonight. And will Darius Garland play? I don't know that it matters. He didn't play in Game 3. They won big. The Heat have not been good in this series. I'm surprised that they haven't been a little bit better. I thought they played well in Cleveland last game, Game 3. Not so much. Cavs destroyed them. Cavs seem to play really well with only one of those guards. Isn't that weird?
But it's been that way all year.
I know.
It's not like,
yeah,
you know, it didn't just happen. So
it was that way last year.
A couple things about the game, because it's weird. I was totally locked into the game, and then the Sanders stuff hit. And so then all of a sudden, I went, like, how many people do you think flipped off the game to go over to?
Many.
Yeah, to go over to, you know, one of the ESPN or NFL TV to go, or to come to the radio, because I think that's where I went right away after that, to come to 92.3 The Fan.
Good,
so,
good call.
Yeah, thanks, boss. Yeah.
Always a company man.
Yeah, yep. Don't you think that? But it was weird. That was about the only thing that was going to take my attention away. That and a 40-point victory. I mean, I still can't. I just thought Miami was going to be a little bit tougher, more of a challenge in this thing. But as they keep playing,
I thought
playing,
so too.
And the Cavaliers keep getting better with every game, it's like, oh, okay. Even though they had a slow start, who cares? They won by 40.
I would 40. Be.
40. Two biggest losses in their franchise history, right? Regular season to the Cavs and now playoff. Loss to the Cavs.
Who do you think wins tonight in Game 4? I would think the Cavaliers win this game.
I think it's over. I think when you win by 40, you have just absolutely ripped the heart out of the other team.
I have a hard time thinking that Miami's going to bounce back and win a game. And at this point, you're down 3-0. You're not, let me knock on wood, you're not going to win 4 straight and take the series. I think Miami's toast. And good for the Cavaliers. They did not let them gain any footing in this series. They did a really nice job putting Miami in its place. Every time here in Cleveland when Miami made a little run, oh, here they come, here they boom, you've knocked them right back down.
No team in NBA history has ever come back from 3-0. No team.
So I don't expect Miami to be the first, do
no.
you?
No.
And as Kenny Atkinson said, we heard his comments earlier here on the station. You know, you want to get it over as quickly as possible, especially with Darius dealing with a dinged up toe. You know, you ever try walking on a bad big toe?
That might have been in this
let alone
round.
Playing basketball.
There has never been a successful comeback from 3-0. Wow. New York was the first team to force a game 7 in a 3-0 series when they were taking on the Rochester Royals in 1951.
Royals were good back then.
Crazy. You're a big Royals fan.
Well, I like the Royals.
I remember you sure. I remember you would call me and you'd be like, this is all prenatal, and you'd be like, and I'd be like, mm-hmm. And then I would be like, oh, yeah, why don't you just make the trip over to Rochester for the game?
If we want to look ahead a little bit, right now the Indiana Pacers lead the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks
are we allowed to do this?
Partially owned by the Haslams. 3-1. And I think that'll be a heck of a series. I do think Indiana will win that series. I especially now think Indiana will win that series after Damian Lillard last night.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah, non-contact, grabbing the Achilles, calf injury, blah, blah, blah. That's a shame.
I was watching him carry him off the floor, and I was just like, oh, man.
We all know what that injury is.
Yeah, it just sucks. I don't wish that on any team.
Of course not.
You know, that's just so hard.
I think Indiana plays a style of ball that could give the Cavaliers some fits. If I'm Indiana, the only thing I think about this is, do we have enough to beat the Cavs? The Cavs have their big four, and now they have DeAndre Hunter. I think Indiana, and I'm looking ahead, and maybe I shouldn't be. I love Pascal Siakam. I think he's a terrific player, and he's going to give them fits out on the wing. And I think Miles Turner is a nasty player. I like him a lot. I think he's very good. And Tyrese Halliburton, to me, might be the best point guard in the NBA. I know that's a big statement. He's in the conversation to me, and he's 6'5". However, do they have enough to compete with everybody on the Cavs roster? I don't know that they do. I think I would take the Cavs in that series if I had to pick one going in. But I think Indiana will make it a really competitive series. I think Indiana's a fine team.
Let's just keep rooting for Milwaukee to keep winning. How's that sound? Keep winning and then try to force this. I don't think they'll.
Well, Milwaukee's only won once.
Yeah, I think.
So I don't think.
You think they're done? You think that series is over then?
Yeah. Not necessarily in five, but it would be in six, I believe.
All right, I'll take that six. Just keep playing. Just keep wearing each other out. I'm good with that.
And that's quite possible. But in Indiana, and I think Rick Carlisle is a really proven coach. That will be a heck of a series. So,
did you see the Lillard? Now I'm just going back for a second. Did you see the Lillard injury?
Yeah.
It's so weird. It was like a long rebound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes one step forward.
It's the same thing that happened with Deshaun last year.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, I guess you can see. Yeah.
I mean, you see that injury happen.
It's just so weird. It was just seemed because. I mean, there's just no one around him, and all he's just hustling.
And, you know, I know nothing from a medical standpoint about this or anything else, for that matter. But, you know, the guy missed games because of blood clots in his legs.
Yeah. And
the deep vein thrombosis thing that, you know, could be deadly. And then he comes back. Does that play into this at all?
Oh, I don't know.
I have no idea, yeah. But it's... oddly coincidental, isn't it?
That's just sad. It just bums me out when you see a good player just...
Hustling.
You know, that's like...
Sure, he was making a play, right?
Yeah, that's all he was doing. I mean, but there was no contact. There was nothing. He was just... His eyes were forward. His body was moving forward. He was just trying to make a play. That sucks.
And so I think they're going to be... You know, they're in trouble. And their team might be in a case... If Lillard's not their guy... And, heck, he might not be there next year, right?
Yeah,
coming back from an Achilles. So that's an interesting situation. I thought Milwaukee might have enough to knock off Indiana and then to knock off the Cavs.
Mm.
And without Damian Lillard, you know, when he was out with the deep vein thrombosis stuff, I thought, well, that's going to be really tough for Milwaukee to win either one of those series. Former Cav Kevin Porter played really well last night, and he's been a nice addition for them. But I don't know that he's enough of an addition. I don't think they're coming back against Indiana. Let's just leave it at that. And that puts the Pacers, who can score a lot of points, can do a lot of things well coached, up against the Cavs, who are the same thing. Well coached, can do a lot of things well. And I think the Cavs might be a little deeper.
I hope you're right. Just kind of looking at the whole big picture. What do we have? One series that's 2-1 that's tied. Clippers series, right? Isn't that the only ones? I think that's only Clippers Nuggets are the only ones that are tied at 2. So.
Lakers are down to Minnesota. I mean, Lakers are one game away from elimination.
Oh, that's too bad. Anybody gonna be bummed if the Lakers get eliminated?
Show of hands.
No,
well, I don't see any here.
Give a firm shucks.
Golly. Yeah, when they picked up Luka, you thought, could this be? And then you look at the rest of the roster and you just think, nope. But I can tell you, next year, if LeBron comes back and the way LeBron's playing, why wouldn't he?
Comes back to Cleveland? What? I'm just kidding.
You're the worst.
It's the way you said it.
You're the worst.
Tomorrow could be a horrible night for LeBron, for at least one of his current team, one of his old teams. And the one team he brought a championship for. This one's for you, Cleveland.
You're the worst.
Miami could go down tomorrow. The Lakers could go down tomorrow. The Warriors, Rockets, that'll be a good game. You'll be able to catch the end of that if you're watching the Cavs game. So that game starts a half hour after. But again, another whopping NBA TV game for the Cavaliers. It'll be super exciting.
Clippers Nuggets has been a good series.
At least you know how many timeouts.
It's been entertaining. They've been feisty. They've been going at each other a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, nothing worse than watching basketball players fight.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about guys running in from the bullpen. That's what you have there.
Have you been watching that series?
Yes.
As Nikola Jokic has been the player coach?
Yeah.
Like, it's like watching Bill Russell when he was the player coach.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Flat out doing substitutions on the one inbounds play, being like, okay, bring me DeAndre Jordan. Get him in here. You get the hell out. Get me him. Like, it's legitimately like watching Bill Russell as the player coach right now.
I'm okay with it. You got a problem with it? You have a problem with it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I don't have a problem with it.
David Adelman's supposed to be the coach, right?
In theory.
The other series in the East, Knicks ready to take control. They're up 3-1 on the Pistons. Celtics up 3-1 on the Magic. That Knicks-Celtics series, if it comes about, and I think it will, that could be rough. And again, Andy,
not rough for the Cavaliers. Let it be as rough as possible.
And let me just go over this real quick. Cavs top seed, they're up 3-0.
Right.
Pacers top seed, they're up 3-1. Knicks top seed, they're up 3-1. Celtics top seed, they're up 3-1. Mm-hmm. Over in the West, Thunder won 4-0. They swept the Grizz. 4-5 series, it's 2-2. Well, that's the way that's supposed to be, right?
Right.
Competitive. The Lakers are getting beat, and they're the 3. The Timberwolves are the 6, even though they were within about one game of each other in the regular season. And Golden State is up 2-1. Golden State's the 7th seed in this.
So is this your argument to get rid of the first round?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I was waiting for
Thank you very much.
Although,
at least a play-in. I understand television ratings, more games.
Should it be a best of 5?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why not?
No, because you played all season long. You shouldn't get eliminated by losing 3 games.
Well, what about those teams that are in the play-in tournament? They get eliminated in 1 game.
Well, that's because they deserve to be. Matt Stevens is the color commentator from UCLA.
So cruel.
I certainly am. That means he watched Carson Schlesinger go from walk-on to second-round pick. Matt Stevens talking Browns linebacker next on Baskin and Phelps.